Okay.
All right, welcome everyone. This is Teresa Stern, Guide Dogs for the Blind, and I'm turning today's speakers series for the Alumni Association over to Rabia Dow, who is our Director of Advocacy and Outreach for Guide Dogs for the Blind, and he will introduce our guest.
Okay, great. Thank you, Teresa. So welcome everybody to Guide Dogs for the Blind Alumni Association Speakers Bureau. This is an advocacy presentation. It is gonna be addressing the issue of the United States Department of Transportation Air Carrier Access Act regulations updates. It's a mouthful, but hopefully we're going to shed some lights on this complicated and a little confusing subject. I think by the end of today's presentation, it'll make a lot more sense. This is the first event of its kind for guide dog users in the country. And we have opened it up to all guide dog users, not just to GDB graduates. As a result, we are expecting quite a few people. And because of that, we're not gonna be able to take live questions for the event. However, we wanna thank those of you who send us questions ahead of time. I shared them with our speaker, and hopefully Ray would get to address all of them. If not, direct us to where we can get some answers as well. We are recording this presentation, and a recording of the presentation itself and the PowerPoint slides that Ray will be sharing with us will be made available on our website over the next couple of days. So keep that in mind as well. So as you all know, probably by now, the new ACA regulations went into effect last Monday on January 11th. These regulations have been tossed around, debated, fought over for probably about 4 years or so by now. Today's presentation will outline the updates, the changes, and we'll also go over how one of the biggest airlines in the country, Alaska Airlines, is trying to implement them as well. Just a quick note here, note that our today's speaker is not representing the airline industry as a whole or the Department of Transportation either. So Mr. Ray Prentice is the Director of Customer Advocacy at Alaska Airlines. He's been in the field and with Alaska Airlines for about 30 years. He's had plenty of highlights that we can share with you about his achievements and accomplishments. A couple of points to mention here. He oversaw consumer affair division and the frequent flyer call center as well. Crucially for us, he is responsible for Alaska Airlines compliance with consumer protection, including the ADA, the ACA, sorry. So that's really what his strength and how he can help us understand what's impacting us the most right now as air travelers. Ray has been a champion of accessibility and making sure that those of us with disability who fly around are not forgotten and kept in mind. He is an advocate for disabled flyers, both at Alaska Airlines and in the industry as well. He has been a partner with Guide Dogs for the Blind, for which we're very grateful, for a long, long time, many years. And many of you may have come across him along the way too. We appreciate your commitment, Ray, and certainly your support. And we look forward for a close relationship as we go through this transition with the ACA and with future successes as well. So without any further ado, I'm gonna turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. And thank you to our partners, Guide Dogs for the Blind.
I've been with Alaska, like you've mentioned, for over 30 years. And the most, by far the most rewarding part of my job is interacting with the disability community, helping our employees, educate them on being inclusive, understanding that all customers have needs with regards to travel. And it's no different with the disability community. It's just a matter of asking, listening, and learning. And that's just an inclusive practice that we have at Alaska Airlines. And it works for all customers, but then we want to do some additional training so that we have that additional resources in our toolkit to make sure that individuals with disabilities have respectful, wonderful travel experiences. We host a number of events or co-host a number of events with Guide Dogs for the Blind, one of which resulted in me being able to go down to San Rafael and be at the Puppy Center, which remains today the highlight, one of the highlights of my life. And actually, I have my bio picture is me with these two beautiful puppies. And my wife tells me that that's the happiest she's ever seen a picture of me, because I notoriously take horrible pictures, but I'm just joyfully smiling in that picture. So I know that's a little bit of a long intro, but it's just Alaska loves Guide Dogs for the Blind. We're committed, we're in it to make sure that the partnership remains strong. And well, I'll talk a little bit about the puppy and training program, but that came about as a result of asks from Guide Dogs for the Blind saying, can you please work with us? So we're very proud of that program. So I'm going to, I've got a PowerPoint that just is going to help talk me through the regulations of the changes, but I will be talking to each slide. And I will hold you accountable, the team here from Guide Dogs, to call me out if I miss any piece that that you'd like me to stop and just talk a little bit longer with. So I'll share the screen now. There, can you see the screen?
It's up, yes.
It's on? Okay,
yep, great. You can see it, thanks, Ray.
Okay, so this first screen is a picture of an Alaska Airlines logoed airplane. And in the upper right, it's got myself with these two beautiful guide dog puppies from San Rafael. And in the bottom left is a puppy from one of our blind low vision events at the Seattle Hangar, in which we brought Guide Dogs for the Blind out. And we had puppies in training and we had working animals having a chance to board an airplane in our hangar and practice and play. So hopefully we'll be able to get back to that program post-COVID, but just to kind of show the relationship and the commitment that we have here at Alaska Airlines. Okay. So what happened on January 11th? Like Robbie had mentioned, this was many years in the making, but there's about 11 major changes that I'll share. And once again, I'm representing you know, my views from Alaska Airlines, but I'm gonna do my best to talk because I'm partnership with the airline industry and share a little bit more, not only if you're looking to buy a ticket on Alaska Airlines, but what will happen if you're looking just in the US and you wanna buy a ticket on any carrier. How I can kind of help direct you for the right resources there. So the first thing is the DOT regs define a service animal as a dog that's individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of a person with a disability. That's a change because before that included recognition of emotional support animals. The new regulation no longer considers an emotional support animal to be a service animal. So those are the two primary big changes in the rule. And we could talk for hours about why, but the bottom line is this is more in alignment with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so that's where we're at today. It requires airlines to treat psychiatric service animals the same as other service animals because they perform a task. At Alaska, we have recognized psychiatric service animals for a number of years, but this is a consistent requirement across the US and for any carriers flying into or out of the US as well. So that's a key change. And it limits the number of service animals traveling to a single passenger to two service animals. And that used to be three. So what I've heard from Guide Dogs for the Blind is that that's not really an issue, that two is plenty. And in most cases it's one. But that is important for the airlines to where we used to see three or more animals show up. Next would be, some of these have not really changed that much, but I'll call them out, that it allows airlines to require a service animal to fit within its handler's foot space on the aircraft. So I think everybody probably on this call is comfortable with the animals either being in the bulkhead row or curling up underneath the seat. But that helps address some of the space issues that we've encountered in the airline industry. It allows airlines to require the animals to be harnessed, leashed, or tethered at all times in the airport and on the aircraft. And it continues airlines to refuse transportation to service animals that exhibit aggressive behavior and pose a direct threat to the health and security of others. I've never seen a working guide dog, guide dogs for the blind or others, that really this presented a problem. And I will also note that we train our staff, if they see that an animal appears to be anxious or just struggling, that our first approach is to come up to you and say, hey, what's going on? And can you talk us through it? So, you know, the first approach is to just listen, ask, listen, and learn. But we have had a number of pretty significant cases in the past few years, including on Alaska Airlines flights, where a service animal has been attacked. And none of us want that to happen. Correct. So we're actually out there looking to ensure the safety of not only you, but your service animal as well. There's a prohibition on refusing based on breed. So that's part of the requirements as well. And then check-in requirements I wanted to cover a little bit. Airlines can't require passengers to physically check in at the airport rather than using an online check-in process. So this requirement does protect you in that you're going to be able to continue to use online services and check-in services that that everybody else gets to use as well. But we can require passengers to provide the service animal forms, and I'll talk about that in a minute, at the departure gate on the date of travel. So that's probably the biggest change and one reason why I reached out to our partners at Guide Dogs for the Blind. I wanted to make sure that that Alaska Airlines was doing our part to help educate the disability community with regards to these new forms that are required, and in particular, how you can access them, what's going to be involved in terms of completing the form as well. So now I'm covering over to, there's two forms that are now required. The main one that I think you're going to encounter quite a bit is a form attesting to the service animal's health, behavior, and training. And just to alleviate any caution, all my interactions with a trained service animal, this should be very easy for you to complete. I'll talk you through the elements of the form. The other form, so the second form that's out there is a form that's required for flights of 8 hours or longer. So if you're flying internationally, you may encounter this form. And it's really a form attesting that the service animal can either not relieve itself, or that you're going to come prepared with the sanitary, so that the animal can relieve itself in a sanitary manner. So I would assume that would be, I'm coming with pee pads and the animal's trained, I can take them to the lab and we can do this in a sanitary fashion. At Alaska, we don't have flights over 8 hours, so we don't envision seeing this form a lot. But now I wanted to talk just a little bit about when would the forms be required? So let's say I'm gonna pick on Teresa. Teresa's getting ready to take a trip.
Where do I get to go, Ray?
Where would you like to go, Teresa? You wanna go to Hawaii?
Yes, please.
Okay, so Teresa is traveling to Hawaii with her service animal, and you've bought a ticket, let's say 2-3 weeks in advance, which is pretty common, right? Mm-hmm. Airlines are allowed to require you to complete this form at least 48 hours in advance. And that gives us time to review it, check it, make sure you've completed the boxes and interact with you so it doesn't become kind of an issue out at the airport. And every carrier will have a link on its website. You can check with their call center. At Alaska Airlines is on our accessible services page, which is fully accessible. When you're purchasing a ticket in the purchasing path, I'm hoping most of you already go in and say, I'm traveling with my service animal, and the special service code gets entered into your reservation record. Or you can actually go into manage your reservation on the website and just say, I want to add a special service code. So there's multiple ways to do this. But at Alaska Airlines, there's a link And we're very proud to mention that we partnered with Open Doors Org, and it's a web form that they've made accessible that you complete this information and you'll be assigned a contact ID. And with the Alaska process, you only have to complete this form once. And the only reason it would become out of date is if the rabies vaccination date expires, then you're gonna have to refresh that form. Every carrier is a little bit different, but we didn't want you to have to complete this form over and over and over again. So at Alaska Airlines, we partnered with Open Doors Org out of Chicago to help the recipient of processing that form. And then we comment your reservation record that the service animal form has been received and completed and you're good to go. So Teresa's done that 2 weeks in advance. She bought a ticket. She clicked the link. It took her to this form and she's now completing the form. And I'll talk you through the elements of that form, but let's say Teresa completes it. She's good to go. And when she comes out to the airport, she doesn't have to do anything. But Teresa, now let's decide that you want to go to Las Vegas tomorrow, right?
Yes, I was thinking that very same thing because I need to do some gambling to get the money for Hawaii. Yeah.
So just on a whim, you just decided to go out and buy a ticket. It's not 48 hours notice, right? But you haven't purchased your ticket within, you purchase it in less than 48 hours. So this rule allows you just to go right out to the gate, complete the form, and you're good to go. So at Alaska Airlines, we will have paper forms out there. We're working on the same ability to just download the information, and you can just get this form electronically completed. But the bottom line is you don't have to get into a super long line at check-in, you know, at the check-in counter.
Yep, good.
This requires us to be able to process all carriers to process this form at the gate. So that was intended to make this impact minimally to all of you out there. So if it's 48 hours in advance, you can expect to be required to complete the form and you can actually do it during the booking path, right? Just while you're purchasing your ticket. But basically make sure that you do that 48 hours before departure date. But if you have an emergency travel and you need to buy a ticket tomorrow to go see, you know, a relative or for whatever reason, you can get these processed at the gate. So hopefully that clears up a little bit. And then one question that's come up a lot, and I wanted to cover it, is what about the Alaska Service Animal Puppy and Training Program? Is that affected in any way by these regulation changes? And the answer is no. We don't enter service animal special service information regards to a puppy in training. We consider that a pet. And so I would encourage anybody who has a puppy in training that's working with Guide Dogs for the Blind or any other professional organization, go to our website. It's one click away from the homepage, from our homepage, and it's called Accessible Services. And there's information on our puppy in training program. This is not required by any government entity. It's a voluntary program that Alaska participates in. And we're gonna keep it as long as it doesn't get abused. And so it's just your responsibility as anybody who's a puppy raiser that wants to travel. Make sure you go in there and you follow it. You follow the instructions as to what you need. So you'll need some sort of a letterhead from Guide Dogs for the Blind, some form of documentation. And then our team actually will look up and see, we have a list of approved organizations that we allow to do this. And Guide Dogs for the Blind, of course, is one of them. So nothing changes there, just a reminder, let's just stick by the rules so I can keep this awesome program running.
That's great, thank you.
You're welcome. Now let's talk about the forms. So there's two forms, right? So the first one is the Service Animal Air Transportation form. And I'm just gonna talk you through this. One, two, three. There's basically four elements to the form. And I bet you everybody who's on this town hall can complete this information. They've got it all memorized. So don't worry about the fact, it's not like the emotional support animal form where there has to be a doctor's letter, a vet certificate. That's not required. So I'll just talk you through. You need your name, your contact information, email, description of the animal. So let's say it's a lab, yellow lab, 40 pounds, that information. That's it for that first section. A description of the weight, so an estimate of the weight of the animal. The second portion of the form is the animal health form. And this is to where you would need to have, you put in the animal's name, the date of the last vaccination and when the vaccination is due to expire, the veterinarian's name and phone number, and that's it. So to me, those are two things I wouldn't necessarily have memorized. So you might want to just keep be mindful of that, but the vet's name and the phone number, and then when your rabies vaccination is going to expire. That's basically it. The next part should be easy peasy for all of the guide dog handlers out there for your amazing animals, but this is more about the animal training behavior. So it's asks a few questions about, has the animal been trained to perform tasks, the name of the animal trainer or organization, and you can put self-trained in there, by the way, if the animal was self-trained, and understanding that the animal must behave in a public setting and that it will, and also to the best of your knowledge that the animal has not behaved aggressively or caused serious injury in the past. That's pretty much it. So I've never interacted with a guide dog from Guide Dogs for the Blind or one of these other major organizations, or even the puppies, to where they act aggressively in any way. But this is one of the protective measures in the rule that helps us try to mitigate animals that are just not, don't have the temperament or are not trained to come onto a busy airplane, a crowded airplane. The next would be just the assurances that you understand that the animal must be harnessed, leashed, or tethered at all times. There isn't a recognition here about causing damage to the carrier, that the carrier could charge for damage if they charge non-disabled passengers for damage as well. And then second of all, that you're signing off an official. This is really important to me. This part says, I'm going to read it to you. I am signing an official document of the U.S. Department of Transportation. My answers are true to the best of my knowledge. I understand that if I willingly, knowingly make false statements on this document, I'm subjected to fines and other penalties. I don't think that should pose any consternation for anybody on this call, but it should cause somebody who's previously had an emotional support animal or somebody who's trying to present a pet as a service animal. We are very hopeful that that will cause them to think twice before before they fib about the status of their animal and then bring their animal on the plane that may not be trained to behave in a public setting. So that's the essence of the form. And I think one of the questions, Robbie, I will come through at the end with some of the questions you sent me, but this is probably a timely, this is a good time to describe. And the question was, why are we being punished as the service animal community by having to complete this form? And I think it's along the lines like, why are we being punished when it's other individuals that maybe caused this to be a problem by misuse mm-hmm. and misbehavior on the plane? Mm-hmm. So this discussion about these new regulations took about 4 or 5 years. As Robbie had mentioned, a lot of debate. I was part of that, the disability community, everybody was, and this was a compromise to try to come up with a way to minimize the impact to the traditional, to the service animal community, but to deal with this pattern of increasing volumes of animals that were misbehaving on the plane and putting passengers and service animals at risk. So this is what we have to work with. And I think everybody is maybe a little dissatisfied with kind of what we ended up with, but actually we all compromised. And I'm feeling like this is a really good place for us to start. And it gives the carrier some ability to address the problem while at the same time minimizing the impact to you. So that's the service animal transportation form. And the other form I just won't speak to too much, is still pretty straightforward. Is it just to ask you, this is the relief attestation form if you're on flights over 8 hours. This is a second form you might see. Very likely you would see it if you're flying internationally. You may be connecting on a flight within the US that's a short haul flight to a long haul flight that's 8 hours or more. So this form should be accessible for you to review and complete as well. And it's basically an attestation that that your animal will either refrain from relieving itself on the plane, or you're going to come prepared to, you know, with the right materials and things. So sanitation, use of a dog diaper, doggy pads, you name it. And that's the second form that we have that you could see. So the next question is like, how do I get information? Because I've thrown a lot at you, you know, in the last 25 minutes. And the first thing I would suggest when you're getting ready to fly, check with your airline. We'd love to have you fly Alaska, but if you fly another carrier, I'd encourage you to check with them as well. Check their websites. They all have, every carrier has some form of accessibility or disability webpage. And you can call them, you could email them, you could chat with them via web chat, but they will all be able to give you guidance. The form is all identical. That this, the good thing for all of you is it's a government U.S. Department of Transportation form, and it's one form, it doesn't change. But the way you maybe interact with the carrier might be slightly different. In Alaska, it's a web form that you're going to complete. Some of the other carriers might have their own forms. The form will be identical, but just a different intake process. We will all have a way at the gate to process forms for people who have ticketed in less than 48 hours. The other place I would encourage you to go is the U.S. Department of Transportation. And I think if you just Googled U.S. Department of Transportation service animal form, or you went to their website, they have a Q&A document. They are the creators of this regulation, so they have a lot of good information that I encourage you to go there as well. Check with your service animal disability-focused service organization for example, Guide Dogs for the Blind. I think a lot of the organizations are probably going to be creating some sort of guides or guidance documents for you. And then when you're out flying, I always encourage you to ask for a complaints resolution official if you're flying and something just doesn't seem right, or you need some help, or there's a service failure. Every carrier has a number of complaints resolution officials trained in the Air Carrier Access Act on site or via 800 number that we can call to help you out. So that's a resource you can have at any given time. So I really encourage that as well. So that concludes the portion that I have, but I did want to just pull up because Robbie, you had come up with some really good questions. So let's see. The first one was, why are legitimate service animal handlers being punished for other people's abuse? And I think I answered that question. Are the DOT forms accessible? The answer is yes. We worked with Open Doors Org and that we had that form tested for usability. And we found a couple of bugs with Android that we're fixing right now. But the bottom line is they're required to be accessible, and they are accessible. To answer that, the answer is yes. One question came up, do forms include accessibility for electronic signature? So at Alaska, we're just requiring you to type your name in, and that we constitute that as approved as an electronic signature. I'm not aware of anybody that's requiring anything other than that. But once again, just check with your carrier when you're ready to fly. No, we're just gonna have you complete the form and you're good to go. Would the forms be available in Braille and large print at the airport for last minute trips? That's a really good question. I don't have an answer for that. That's the first time that came up. I do know that we have basically taken an electronic copy of the DOT form, and we have provided it to every airport we serve. So we serve 115 airports. If they need to, they can go and print out that form, and they can assist in facilitating and completing the form with you. So I will take that back to our group to see if that's something that we could do.
So Ray, along those lines, if somebody does not have access to the internet or not able to fill out a form online, can that be done in any other way prior to them showing up to the airport? Is it like by phone, for example, or something like that? Is that possible?
I think we can probably talk somebody through completing the form through our call center. If they need help, we can help in terms of talking them through. And like I mentioned, we are going to be able to print hard copies out at the airport in a pinch. So I think this is going to kind of grow and iterate, Robbie, a little bit over time. because this regulation is so new and we're just kind of, it's all new to all of us. But I'm going to take these questions back to our project team that you provided to me, and we can kind of noodle them over. I neglected to mention one thing. So what's going on right now? Does that mean that today there are no more emotional support animals flying in the U.S.? And two, are all these forms being required right now? And I can tell you it depends on the carrier. What we're doing at Alaska Airlines is between now through February 28th, we are encouraging people traveling with service animals to use the form, but we're not requiring it. So we're taking this basically a month to help train, educate, and get everybody used to it. And it helps us get used to, you know, our employees getting used to our processes. But it also is part of just helping the service animal community get used to these forms as well. We will continue to see emotional support animals where somebody has ticketed before January 11th and were approved to travel with an emotional support animal. They will be able to continue to travel through February 28th, at which time after that, we will no longer allow emotional support animals to travel. So I'm hearing it depends a little bit by carrier, but we're all trying to be, I think we're all trying to be helpful in terms of educating. But the bottom line is connect with your carrier to find out, you know, when you're, I think everybody should get used, and I would strongly encourage people to start using these forms right away. Let's see, why do you need the dog's name on the form? That was really interesting. That was part of the collaboration with the disability community. And I think that came from the disability community to suggest that the dog's name is on the form. So once again, this was kind of a agreement negotiation amongst multiple stakeholders, including airlines and the disability community. And we have heard some people kind of indicate that that might help during the interaction at the airport. If we know the dog's name, maybe just to have everybody settle down and be more relaxed to have the dog's name. But that's my understanding how that came about.
Let me jump in for a second here, Ray, because the concern is that employees may inadvertently call the dog or distract the dog by name from doing their job. That's where that concern came from. Usually we don't really share the name of the dog to reduce the distraction.
I kind of alleviate this concern. When you complete the form, I'll use Alaska example. You're going to complete this web form. It's going to be reviewed. It's going to be approved. And then we will document your reservation record that says service animal docs approved. The information on that form is not conveyed to our ticket counter agents, to the flight attendants. Oh. That would include the animal's name. But now let's say that there's a problem with this animal. The animal attacked or bit somebody. Okay, how do you differentiate, you know, this customer in this animal from any other animal that's out there? I think that helps a little bit. Some people travel with multiple, you know, you can travel with up to two service animals as well. Right. But the name of the animal, is my understanding, is not going to be conveyed so that every customer service agent, every flight attendant is going to have access to that information. That's kind of behind the scenes information. Does that help, Ravi?
Yes. And that's an Alaska airline practice, or is that an industry practice?
I would hesitate to speak on behalf of all the carriers. Mm-hmm. I can tell you what we're doing at Alaska Airlines, but I think the intent is to help facilitate the processing and the approval of these forms. Not necessarily to call out the animal's name.
Right.
So everybody in the system knows and will be using the animal's name. I would be surprised if that was the case.
Oh, thanks for the explanation. That's great.
Yeah. If you book two separate reservations to make a round trip on the same airline, do you have to submit the form twice? The form is required per trip. So if you've got four or five flight segments on Alaska Airlines and you're going out now and you're coming back in 3 months, you only have to do the form once. But if you've got two separate reservations, I would view that you'd really want to work with the carrier to associate those two reservations together. And we could do that. Like if you have two separate tickets on Alaska, we can associate that reservation together. And I think that will work. But if you bought one ticket on United and one ticket on Alaska and they were totally not associated with each other, you'd probably have to do the two forms. Let's see here. Can the airline save my form so I don't need to resubmit the same information if I fly often? At Alaska Airlines, you can. And some other carriers may be working on that, but I can tell you at Alaska, when you download that form right up front, it will assign you a contact ID and it gives you instructions on how you can retain that. And then the next time you fly, it's going to say, do you have a contact ID? And if you keep that and you use it the second time, as long as the form is still valid, primarily meaning is the expiration date for rabies still good? You're only going to have to do the form once. So we work pretty hard on that. We're very proud that Open Doors took the initiative to come
That's
up with
great.
That solution.
Yeah.
Let's see, what's the impact of updated ACA regs on puppy raisers and guide dog instructors transporting dogs? Each carrier might be a little bit different. So if you're used to working with the carrier, I would double check with them. Our policies have not changed. So if you're a guide dog instructor transporting dogs, I think if you're delivering that animal to the final destination to a client, we allow that. And then I've described the puppies and training program before, so that is not affected either.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked, what about, is the proper term comfort animals or animals that go into the hospitals? Asked if they were covered by this program. And unfortunately, the answer, that wasn't covered before and it's not covered now.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's from the team, Teresa, Robbie.
Let me ask
questions that you feel like maybe I should cover that I haven't?
Yeah, just general questions here, Ray. So for folks who are listening here and they may have questions, from what you've said so far is the best policy is to check with your airline. Do you encourage them to contact the Department of Transportation directly? And if so, what benefit would that be?
The reason I mentioned the US Department of Transportation is their regulation. And they own it. And so I'd probably be remiss not to mention that that's a good resource to go to. But that's to where you could find general information. You could get the regulation itself. And there is a Q&A document on the service animal changes. If you're looking for specifics about flying with a carrier and you want to make sure that you're following their policies, that's where I would encourage you to go directly to the airline.
Mm-hmm.
And find out what their policies are. Like I mentioned, the form itself is identical throughout the industry. It's required to use the same form. But the way it's intaked, the format, everything might be a little different per carrier.
Mm-hmm. So one other follow-up question here. So now that the regulations are, for all intents and purposes, being implemented, is there a period of time... when you're going to, is there a period of time when you're going to review how things are going?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry, my dog is telling me it's dinner time.
Well, I don't blame your dog for that.
Smart dog.
So is there a point of time, 4 months, 6 months, a year from now, when you're going to kind of review how things are going as an industry? Is that built into this or not? And what can you tell us about that?
That's a really good question. In the rule, the way I read it, DOT had entertained that they'd be interested in finding out and learning how things are going. In particular, the airlines, Alaska Airlines as well, are going to be collecting metrics and data. You know, we would hope that all of the service animal users out there have great experiences, and people who previously had pets where they said that they were emotional support animals will pay the pet fee. And we will not have animals misbehaving on the flights, but we don't know that, right? So that's where I think we're going to be, as an airline industry and Alaska Airlines, we're gonna be collecting metrics and guest experiences and sharing that with the U.S. Department of Transportation. So I would feel that the service animal users out there, you should be doing the same. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see what's working and what's not.
That would be great if we
good
can,
point. You know,
in 6 months to a year from now, pause and look back and see how things are going.
I have just Teresa, a sort questions? Of a, just a little a question that someone had asked me recently, and I answered with what I thought was right. But so, you know, some of our dogs are Labradors or Golden Retrievers. Some schools use German Shepherds, and they're, you know, fairly large, but they're not huge. And so as long as they fit in the space in front of you, or, you know, under your seat in front of you. But, you know, sometimes like a paw will stick out, or, you know, a flopped ear over into somebody's bit of foot space. That isn't going to upset the airline and say the dog's too big to fly, right?
Yeah, once again, speaking on behalf of Alaska, the size requirements, we've kind of had them out there already. If somebody has like a 250-pound English Mastiff, you know, it's probably going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. But we're going to make a reasonable effort to make this work. And there's even guidance in there to see what you can do if the flight's lighter loads, if there's an adjacent seat. But really, the rule is it should occupy your own personal space.
Right.
You know, you could be traveling with the travel companion. Mm-hmm. You can share the foot space a little bit.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see carriers being diligent in terms of making sure that the, if, you know, we've had some animals to where their legs are just splayed out into the aisle.
Yeah.
Which creates a trip hazard, safety hazard, that type of thing. My experience with working with Guide Dogs for the Blinds and other organizations is most of these animals are really well trained, and there's they don't present, you know, if an animal's a quarter inch over the line, if what you're saying is, you know, I don't think we're going to be police on that. We just want to make sure that the experience is good and the experience is safe.
Yeah, that was sort of the advice I gave. I said, I don't think you need to worry about it, because our dogs are so good and they curl up. And a lot of times people beg to want to sit next to them. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, just my view is a lot of the animals in the past just were, it was unfortunate these animals were put in positions to be put on planes when they were not socialized. They were not, maybe didn't have the temperament. And then putting this really stressful, uncomfortable situation, and
it's
what happens?
Their fault.
What happens? They act out, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's not their fault. Well, Ray, what's the name of your dog? What kind of dog do you have?
I have a Sheltie, large Sheltie, and he's the one who's wary of everybody, and so he takes a long time for you to let him into his pack. And the other, I have a half Australian Shepherd. Half German Shepherd. So two high energy dogs.
Yeah.
But, I love them. My kids.
You have a handful, Ray.
Yeah.
If I take them out running in the woods 3 to 4 miles a day, that's partly why we moved down here, was for our dogs to be able to do trail running. So they're really happy down here.
Yes, I bet.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your attention to this matter over the years, and especially in this transition right now. You know, it's been a rough 4 years going over this regulation updates for everybody's sake. I mean, it's been stressful, and you know, as you said, it's a matter of compromise. We give a little and we take a little, and let's see how this works. We appreciate all your effort on our behalf and your ongoing support. And hopefully we will be able to have you join us in person in the not too distant future as well.
Right, for some more puppy time, Ray.
Yeah. That would be wonderful. Our
that's right.
Our staff love the events, the partnerships with Guide Dogs for the Blind. Absolutely love them.
We do too. And thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ray.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Goodbye.
And for everybody, you know, hopefully this has been an informative session. I know there's a lot of information that's been shared with us. Some of it is known to us, and some of it we're still trying to figure out. And probably it's going to take, you know, as Jane Flower said to me yesterday, she'll find out when she actually gets to the airport. You know, we're all gonna drive it to see what it's like. So hopefully this has been helpful, and this should not be the last time we meet about this matter. If you have any other concerns, advice, suggestions, recommendations of to address this subject further as a community, we're happy to listen and hold more meetings, bring in other speakers, advocate on behalf of guide dog users. There's a lot going on behind the scenes with the coalition of guide dog schools as well, as we try to fine tune all these details that Ray spoke about. And as always, we're in close contact with the consumer groups. I know that members of both ACB, GDUI, and NFB, NACDU are online with us today. It's great to have everybody here. And hopefully we can look forward to closer collaboration down the road. So thanks again for your attention, and have a good rest of the week.
Yes. Thank you, Rabia, for putting this together for us. And thanks to Deb Cook-Lewis, who is our webinar host master today. So thank you so much, Deb, for jumping in and helping us out with this. Deb is a grad of GDB and also on our Alumni Association board. So thank you, Deb.
Thank you so much, Deb. Yeah, thank you. Amen.
All right.
All right. You take care, everybody.
Everybody have a good evening. Thank you.
Bye-bye.